Diatima Quartet performing Study 4 for Treatise on the Veil by Matthias Pincher. It was recorded at the Cheltenham Festival last year. And that brings us to the end of tonight's programme. Next week we have music from this year's Cheltenham Festival. James Weeks conducts the New London Chamber Choir with pieces by Gabriel Jackson, Michael Zeph Gordon and Gers Ligeti. And don't forget, there's more information about this programme at the Here and Now page on the Radio 3 website. Until next week, good night.
Here and Now was presented by Robert Warby, and the programme was produced by Felix Carey. This is BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting between 90 and 93 FM on digital radio and also online. And the time now is 3.5 minutes past midnight. Next tonight, it's the Early Music Show, presented this evening by Lucy Skeeping.
Thank you. Organ Voluntary in A Minor by John Stanley, performed there by Richard Marlowe. Visitors to London in the first half of the 18th century would have been struck by the grandeur of its buildings. Instead of little houses and shops jostling for space in the narrow streets, now, in the wake of the Great Fire, stood imposing, symmetrical, classical buildings, elegant squares, leafy pleasure gardens, and for entertainment, large, comfortable theatres. And in the heart of the city were the newly popular coffee houses, crowded, noisy places to do business or finance, or simply somewhere for a good old-fashioned man-to-man chat. But for some, there was a more private space to discuss the workings of the day, the Old Temple Church, which had stood for some 600 years behind Fleet Street on the slope leading down to the River Thames. Modelled on the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem and beautified by Christopher Wren in the 1680s, this unusual round church was a meeting place for lawyers of the Inner Temple. And when the talking was done, many would no doubt have stayed on to hear the glorious music emanating from its great organ and admire the brilliant technique of its player, the composer of the organ music we've just heard, John Stanley. In a thriving city bursting with culture and entertainment of all sorts, you might say there was nothing particularly special about a good working city organist. But John Stanley had overcome not just the usual ups and downs of a job in the music business, but a handicap that makes his achievements all the more amazing. When he was just 2 years old, he'd fallen on a marble hearth with a china basin in his hand, a tragic accident that left him for the rest of his life almost totally blind. Born in 1712, Stanley was a Londoner through and through, and by the time he was 22 and the organist at the Temple Church, he'd become something of a celebrity. A composer with numerous concertos, sonatas, cantatas, anthems and organ pieces under his belt, a conductor, and a fine player of both the violin and the organ. His skills attracted the attention of many leading musicians of the day, including Handel, more or less his contemporary, who regularly visited the temple, specially to hear its miraculous blind organist. John Stanley's Organ Concerto No. 2 in D. Gerald Gifford with the Northern Symphonia. Stanley's life and career in some ways run parallel to Handel's. It must have been hard for any composer to make his name in the shadow of such a powerful figure, and indeed, in his organ works, the spirit of Handel is never far away. And yet, while today Stanley's name is little known, in his time he was extremely highly thought of. But let's hear some more of his music now. I guess Stanley's best known these days among the organ-playing fraternity, so it's quite a revelation to discover his Opus 2, six very appealing string concertos he wrote in the mid-1740s. They're particularly interesting because they sort of fit right into the crack, stylistically speaking, between the old Baroque style of Handel and what was just becoming the newly fashionable style of the time, the so-called Galant style. And Stanley's concertos must have flown off the shelves because they were published and republished again and again. This is Collegium Musicum 90, directed by Simon Standage.
Thank you.
Concerto for Strings, Opus 2, No. 4, by the organist John Stanley, a contemporary of Handel working in London in the middle of the 18th century. So, after such an awful childhood accident that left him almost totally blind, Stanley's parents must have worried about how he was going to cope for the rest of his life. By way of a diversion, he was taken to study music at the age of 7. It wasn't a very promising start, so his parents sought the services of Maurice Greene, composer and organist at St Paul's Cathedral. Student and teacher now clicked immediately, and Stanley's progress was little less than astonishing. At the tender age of 9, he was invited to fill in from time to time as deputy organist at All Hallows Church in the city, and when the post became vacant 2 years later, the now 11-year-old was taken on full-time. I suppose in any age this precociousness would have been something special, and the St James Evening Post reported the appointment with some excitement. The young musician, it declared, is become the surprise of the town for his ingenious performance on the harpsichord and organ, and in the opinion of good judges, he equals, if not exceeds, the merits of his celebrated predecessor. Stanley was now unstoppable. At 14, he beat a number of other candidates to become organist at St Andrews in Holborn, and 3 years later became the youngest person ever to gain a Bachelor of Music from Oxford University. Old Mr Green, no mean composer himself, must have been very proud.
Thank you.
the anthem Lord Let Me Know Mine End by Maurice Greene, composer and organist at St Paul's Cathedral in the 18th century and the first real teacher of John Stanley, who we're focusing on today. Once Stanley was in his mid-20s, it was time for marriage, and the well-educated Sarah Arland, daughter of a captain in the East India Company, appears to have been an excellent match. She brought with her a substantial dowry and made a comfortable home. Sadly, they had no children, but they enjoyed their leisure time with a large circle of friends, making music or playing cards. And even in this, Stanley's lack of sight was no barrier. His cards were apparently marked with little needle pricks, much like Braille, I suppose. And very good at whist he became, apparently often upbraiding his guests for being too slow at sorting through the pack. When it came to music, though, it was his extraordinary memory that enabled him to function so well. His sister-in-law Anne acted as his amanuensis. The writer John Hawkins, who lived just across the road, supplied texts for his cantatas. And for several years, Stanley directed the subscription concerts at the Swan Tavern in Cornhill and at the Castle in Paternoster Row. He was also able to direct several different Handel oratorios. All he needed was for Anne to play them through just once, and they were committed to memory.
Time for
Streams of Pleasure, the duet from Handel's oratorio Theodora. Carolyn Sampson and Robin Blaise, the soloists with the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment, directed by Nicholas Kramer. So, Stanley successfully overcame his blindness to become one of the most acclaimed musicians of his day, apart from Handel, of course, who stood head and shoulders above them all. But when Handel's sight began to fail, it was Stanley who his doctors suggested might be able to help. Handel's initial reaction was pessimistic. He laughed out loud and declared that if the blind lead the blind, they both fall into the ditch. Stanley would have been able to offer some assistance, though, when it came to coping with the practicalities. Learning scores entirely from memory was one art he'd had to perfect, although his blindness was presumably the main reason why he generally preferred instrumental works and short vocal pieces to full-blown opera. Nevertheless, his cantata, The Choice of Hercules, that we're going to hear now, was quite a large-scale work by his standards. Here's the Overture and March, the Wallace Collection and the English String Orchestra, conducted by William Boughton.
Thank you.
The Overture and the March from the cantata The Choice of Hercules by John Stanley. After Handel's death, Stanley's association with the great Saxon continued. He collaborated with Handel's assistant, Christopher Smith, in the annual oratorio season at Covent Garden, and they also worked together at Handel's beloved Foundling Hospital, where the annual performance of Messiah continued to raise much-needed funds. All We Like Sheep Have Gone Astray, a chorus from Handel's Messiah, the Academy of St Martin in the Fields, conducted by Neville Mariner. Later in life, Stanley was elected a member of the Foundling Hospital, and he continued to select and compose music for their chapel services. He took this position very seriously and was especially interested in promoting the musical education of the children. After all, his own musical education against the odds had given him a good life. Now a thoroughly established figure in London, he was invited to succeed William Boyce as Master of the King's Band, George III, that is, writing many odes and wedding anthems for members of the royal family. He was made organist to the Honourable Society of the Inner Temple, and he even had his portrait painted by the great Gainsborough. But he still found time for teaching and playing the organ at the Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens. His childhood accident had undoubtedly been a tragedy, but somehow, with the force of his character and, of course, his talent, John Stanley's life turned out to be rich and fulfilling. Let's end today with the only example we have of his theatre music. He composed Arcadia, or The Shepherd's Wedding, to celebrate the marriage of George III to Queen Charlotte, a work which was revived for the first time, incidentally, by Radio 3 in 1986 for a more modern royal wedding between the Duke and Duchess of York.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Through the Night on BBC Radio 3. I'm John Shea, and in the next couple of hours, among other things, you can hear a dramatic Handel cantata and the Symphony No. 6 by Schubert. To Switzerland, first of all, for a chamber concert which pairs Brahms' horn trio together with a Mendelssohn violin sonata. All three that Mendelssohn composed are in the key of F. The F minor, Opus 4, was the only one of them to be published in his lifetime. The 16-year-old was still writing under the influence of Mozart and Beethoven, but that didn't prevent such original strokes as the solo violin recitative that begins the sonata. Isabella Faust and Alexander Melnikov are the players.
Thank you.